For January 20th, 2017, we talk about the Nintendo Switch announcements, Doom, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 181. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I'm sitting here. I'm drinking a cocktail. They were out of my normal diet ginger ale that I get. So I have regular Werner's, and it is a very strange mix, that particular flavor with the bourbon that I have in there. So we'll see if this burns clean or if this ends up being a fucking mess. Who knows?
Yeah. I propose someone, Michael Prenn, posted a bourbon based cocktail, to the Levels page because it was called the Hearthstone, which, you know, makes me very happy. Mm-hmm. But it was bourbon, sweet vermouth, and then Benedictine, which I've not heard of before.
Like the monk?
Yeah, like it's named after the monk. I looked into it. But funny enough, the Wikipedia page about it did not have anything on how it actually tastes. So yeah. I like read it and I was like, well, I know a lot about the monk now, but that wasn't helpful. So I have a feeling like it was a fan of the monk that wrote the page out of obligation to completeness to Benedictine's story. So he could make sure he's linking out to all the right places.
Yeah, to just roll it.
Yeah. But orange bitters and then an orange twist. And it sounds delicious. So if I can get my hands on some Benedictine, I might try it.
You just have to go to Party Source and do not be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. They have so many people. I feel like every aisle has a Party Source person in it.
Mm, yeah. And this is somebody walking around with a scanner.
Exactly.
Hovering and waiting for you.
It is. That is truly, like, if you like alcohol in any measure, that is truly a mecca for you. I've not seen anything like it before or since. Yeah,
we've talked about it on the show in the past. It is a Walmart-sized building that is full of pretty much nothing but liquor and party supplies. And by party supplies, I mean either paper plates.
by party supplies, I mean liquor.
Yeah, it's liquor and liquor accessories. So it really is kind of a fantastic place, and you've got those sweet, sweet Kentucky tax rates.
So can we do a fun Party Source aside?
Yes.
The guy who owned Party Source wanted to make a distillery next door to it, so he sold the company to his employees, since he was pretty confident that he wouldn't find a bank that would give him a loan. Mm-hmm. And so he took the money that he made selling it to his employees to build a distillery in the parking lot.
Yeah,
and he's just making his own type of distillery now.
Yeah, so. It's there. It's up and running. You can see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
new riff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of alcohol and things, I happen to be drinking a Santo beer from St. Arnold, which is a brewery here in Houston, and I'm drinking it in my goddamn marathon finisher mug.
Yeah, yeah. It is your victory chalice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tankard. Thing.
You are kidding about the chalice thing. Jala sent a picture of this, and my God, like,
this mug
looks more like a club than anything else.
Yeah, it's large enough to house a family of ponies. Yeah, you kind of have to chase the ponies out of it before you fill it up. Otherwise, you just get pony water.
It's about three quarters of the way full in your picture, Jala, and I imagine that took three beers. So.
Well, also, Ben, if you ever happen to be over in Houston for some damn reason, we should go take a tour of the brewery. I've been told it's very cool, but I've never actually been in there. So,
okay, I will keep that in mind if I ever go to Houston.
For any reason.
I always forget that we have like this very strong Texas component to the show and kind of the network.
I do
now.
As well.
Yeah. It is something in my head. I've got this kind of mixed up because I'm taking all of the orders we've ever gotten on the Duckfeed store and all of our Patreon addresses. I've got a bulletin board with a map over it, and I just want to get a sense of kind of our reach and where we're popular, and I want to have that in a tactile way. And I just put a shitload of stuff in Texas earlier today. So
Yoo-hoo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Texas is a place for shitloads of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I'm going to be seeing a bunch of people at PAX South. That's going to be next week. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well,
yay.
So
it's a week from, yeah, a week from when this comes out, correct?
Yeah. Yep. I will not be there on that Friday, but I will be there on the Saturday and the Sunday. So
nice.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, I think that unless anybody has any other stuff they want to put in, Jella, it sounds like I cut you off, but I know you're going to talk about more in the grind section.
No, you weren't cutting me off. I was done for now.
Yeah.
You all have inspired me. I need to do like I want to go get a drink in my hand now. So I should have done that before I came, but
yeah,
I'm going to grab a drink.
Okay. Well,
and you know what? Damn it. I'm going to make it a cocktail.
Okay. Well, one moment here. We've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. So this is the news section, and I think we'd be remiss. It's so awkward, right, when we record this show, because we record it on a Tuesday. It comes out on a Friday. Like, that just ends up being the way that it works out for us. And that sometimes means that we miss, you know, large swaths of news. And so I'm going to kind of insert myself into the beginning of this. Normally I ask if anybody else wants to go first, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Switch announcement.
Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because it was earlier today, and I was thinking, what are we going to talk about? And I realized there's that whole big thing that happened that we need to mention. So, for anybody who's listening in the future, or somebody who doesn't know quite what we're talking about, we've known that the NX, Nintendo Switch, is kind of a hybrid tablet / console portable kind of thing. And that's pretty much about it. And here this past week or so, we got a lot more information, including a launch date, a price, a couple of games that are going to be bound for it, and some more kind of hardware information. So did any of you watch that announcement as it went on, or have you read any of the stuff, any of the pertinent information after the fact?
I've read some of the stuff after the fact, but I did not watch the launch.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I'll put myself in that same bucket. Kind of curiously grazed the articles, but I think when the announcement went on, I was doing family stuff, so I was just like, meh.
Yeah, it was also like at 11 p.m. on a Sunday night or something like that. Jolly?
Marathon?
Marathon. There we go. Sorry. time is weird. So I watched the announcement live. And I'm pretty excited about this thing. There's an awful lot of kind of like snark and easy jokes going on about it, and I think that there are definitely things that are about the overall details. But like, as it stands, I've kind of learned not to bet against Nintendo, and they've been kind of impervious to a lot of about these things. So here's kind of the vital information. It is going to be $300, $299, and it's coming out on March the 3rd, which is like tomorrow. Like we basically just have February. And I hope that you are not, you know, as you're hearing this, thinking, hey, I should probably go pre-order that, because you can't. They're all gone. which is bad for me, because I wanted to pre-order one of these bad boys. So bleh.
Even I was considering it, but by the time I woke up that day, like, sorry.
Shit. I guess I'm just gonna have to like, I'll just do what I usually do and like walk into a Target and then just see. Like, I'll go into a Target at 8 a.m. hope they got a shipment, and then we're just gonna roll with it. It's gonna be launching with Breath of the Wild, the new Zelda game. It's going to be like a 6-inch capacitive touchscreen on it, so similar to a Vita. With these little things called Joy-Cons that slide into the side of it, and also have a lot of motion control kind of stuff. The other big piece of software that they announced was, Super Mario Odyssey, which has Mario coming into our world and standing next to real-ass people.
Yeah, this was the story that I wanted to talk about specifically.
I'm sure it'll be fun, but it's a little weird.
It looks like Grand Theft Mario.
Also, somebody modded Mario into Grand Theft Auto 5 on PC as a response
Correct.
To this. Yeah.
The video I saw was Grand Theft Auto 4, but yes.
No.
And it looked awesome. He was bowling. He ate at Burger Shot and then immediately went to the bathroom afterwards.
I don't need to think about pissing Mario.
Wasn't that Super Mario Sunshine?
I mean, it's pretty similar. Like, this is in it is in the line. Like, this is a new quote unquote mainline console Mario. You know, that follows kind of a direct line from 64 and Sunshine. So yeah.
Yeah. So all the like trailer stuff where it looks, you know, like they show the scenes where it looks like he's in New York City, essentially, mm-hmm. Or you know, like a cartoony version of that. Like, so that looked really weird. I saw the trailer for it earlier today, and that looked a little bit different, where it actually showed the different, like, worlds he travels to.
Yeah.
So it looks like maybe that New York City type thing might be a hub or even just a single, like, place he visits, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, it's like a single biome or something like that, or a single kind of stage, because there's a lot more kind of traditional Mario imagery and also some more kind of fantastical galaxy kind of things.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes me think, like, they're like, what world have we not done yet for Mario? Like, what is left? I know, the real world.
Yeah.
It's like,
they did that in the movie, and that did not turn out well.
But the gameplay in this thing looks baller AF. Like, it looks really fun.
You have the boomerang hat that you can jump on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty badass.
Yeah, you're just rolling around with temporary platforms like your Mega Man. Yeah.
Bowser is dressed like a white-suited pimp for some reason.
That's gangster Bowser. Yeah. I don't know. Like, this looks really cool. Even the kind of sports friends kind of thing, the Jazz Joust, like a 1-2 snap or something like that, whatever it is, where
1-2 switch.
1-2 switch, yeah. Where you're doing like
how do you mess that one up, dude?
Oh, I don't know. Because they were snapping all the time. Like their Sonic branding was on point during that presentation. Whenever Switch was mentioned, they would do the little like it was so weird and quirky. And I mean that in a good way, not in like a sarcastic internet way. but that 1-2 switch thing, you know, it looks pretty slight. Like, I don't know if that's like a $60 game or whatever, but like as a weird little proof of concept for this Joy-Con kind of thing, like that looks pretty great to me, actually. Like, I want more, you know, I want them to play around with having this screenless game, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned sports friends, and specifically within that, Johann Sebastian Joust.
Yeah,
is the game that does that, and I really like that idea. I love the fact that Nintendo has just been like, "Fuck y'all, we are not doing a normal controller ever again."
Nope, we're done. And like, people got real salty about that. Like, they were complaining, like, "Oh, I thought this was going to be a return to form. What are they doing?" It's like, they can't compete. You know that. Like, if they tried to play the same game as everybody else, they wouldn't be able to stand up to it. They have to differentiate. That's been their path this whole time. Like,
yeah,
you know, if they can capture 1/3 of what the Wii got them with this, that's going to be a big deal, you know.
Well, and that's what it is they only, you know, they only need to have something as successful as the Wii every like 4 console generations to be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So it's like poker, where like even a 20%, you know, chance of success means that you bet like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know, here it's just swing for the moon every time. It's the Madden approach, you know, mm-hmm. just throw the Hail Mary every time.
Yeah.
As long as you're playing on the right difficulty setting.
Don't get it twisted though. This is not as easily understandable as the Wii was. Like, it's complicated to explain. Like mm-hmm. what the Switch is. So like, wait, it's a Game Boy, but then I put it into a dock and it goes on the TV. Like, what are you, like, this is, I'm going to say adventurous, and don't like read in like a positive connotation on that. Like, this is bizarre what they're trying to do. And like, I'm down for it. I'm along for the ride. I want Nintendo to be weird, because if I'm looking for just tight and like high end game, I have a fucking PC. Or I have a PS4.
Oh yeah,
you know, yeah. I don't know. I don't think that I'm coming at this from a fanboy point of view, because I'm not coming out and saying, "Hey, this is the only machine that's going to let me play, you know, Mario and Zelda and all that." Like, that's kind of taken as read, but like I just want them to even have just like a playground for themselves, even if, as it always will, the third party support is going to fall through.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think this is the smallest launch lineup yet, and the way that we're going, it's going to wind up there will just be a new Mario and Zelda game every year, mm-hmm. With a new console attached to it.
But like, it's a small launch. But can you call a launch with a Zelda game a weak launch?
Yeah, they're counting on the fact that will not be the case. I have a question for you guys. At the very end of the Mario or Super Mario Odyssey trailer. The hat sprouts eyes, mm-hmm. and that's actually in the logo.
Yeah.
Are they going to go some like, it's been sentient this whole time? Just couldn't think of anything to say. And it got awkward, so it figured it better stay silent.
They like, find...
I'm very curious as to what direction they're going to go with that.
I have no idea. I don't know. Like, I imagine it's going to be your Navi character.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's probably going to be like your Navi.
Yeah. So. And it looks exactly like the Pokedex from Pokemon Sun and Moon with its big eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I was, before the Wii U launched, I was more likely to buy a Wii U than now with the Switch.
Right.
And I think that's a weird place to be because I feel like the Switch has more promise than the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, been a pretty eventful 3 years. I didn't mean to cut you off, but like circumstances have changed. You know, like you have a gaming sure. PC now. Like you, like yeah. there's plenty. it's not like mm-hmm. you're at a loss for like cool, unique stuff to play. You know, and neither am I. Neither is anybody else. For that matter. Sorry. Go ahead and say what you're going to say. I'm a dick. I cut you off.
No, you're fine. And it was kind of headed in that direction where just I feel like when I was, you know, when I had nothing, when I was starting from a blank slate, mm-hmm. I could maybe justify like, oh, maybe I'll go with you and just kind of zag. Mm-hmm. Now that I feel like, you know, I'm a little more established. And like you said, there's all this high end stuff in my living room to play on.
Yeah.
I for some reason feel less likely to want the quirky, you know, off the wall thing. And I'd have to think about that a little more to get to exactly why that is. But yeah.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I'm excited is the fact that the PS4 Pro or the Microsoft Scorpio or whatever, the Xbox One Scorpio, like those, you know, half step iterations on a console cycle, they don't do anything for me.
Yeah, Nintendo could have released like a bag of wet socks as their next console, and it still would not have been as dumb as the PS4 Pro and Microsoft Scorpio.
But they're not. They're releasing a piece of plastic that can determine whether or not you threw rock, paper, or scissors. And that's great.
Compared to a bag of wet socks, it's fantastic.
Well, I think you misunderstand me, Dennis. I genuinely think that's pretty great.
Yeah, no, I follow you. I would not fault anyone for being excited. I'm like, Nintendo has to figure their third-party shit out, though. Like, it's, you know, generations this way, and they... Well, I find myself about to say they can't keep on doing that, but they seem to be doing all right per my previous statement on, you know, they only need one of these to go big mm-hmm. every four console cycles and they're fine. So I don't know. I just, you know, for the goodwill of gamers to persist, you're getting into generationally, you're getting into a segment of gamers that, you know, didn't grow up with the incredible Nintendo nostalgia. Mm-hmm. That we did, and so, you know, that at some point that's got to be a finite resource, right?
So this is revealing the fact that I don't interact with anybody who is under the age of 27, but I mm-hmm. think that Nintendo is a little bit like Disney in that they constantly remanufacture their own nostalgia. I'd be willing to believe that there are people who have Nintendo nostalgia even if they grew up with the GameCube or later.
Well, in God, I guess we're getting to the point where people who were kids when the Wii came out are old enough to buy their own console system. So
yeah.
Nintendo's going to do just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to take the whole episode with this. Is there anything else that people wanted to throw on top of it? Like, I have two concerns that I'll just kind of put out here. Battery life is always going to be a thing. Like, I don't see this being something that I take out of the house, regardless of what their trailers and commercials say. So whatever, I'll just dock it at the end of the night, or, you know, more likely fall asleep with it on my chest and then put it on the dock before I go to work the next day.
Do you travel with like a 3DS or a Vita or anything?
No, not really. Like when I, so, okay. So what do you consider travel? It's not in my like everyday carry. So I don't take my Vita, to work, but like when I go, when I go home to Mansfield, I pretty much always have either my Vita or my, my 3DS in my backpack.
Yeah. I'd say that's the kind. Anytime you're spending a significant amount of time on transit that you are not driving,
yeah,
I'd consider it travel. But which if you live in a city, it could be your commute to work every day. But
it charges on USB-C, so you would just throw one of those cords into your bag and then just roll with it. You know?
Oh, sure.
Like there's also that to consider. It doesn't just charge on the dock. The other thing is storage size. It comes with 32 gigs internal, which is fucking pathetic.
Yeah, they said the new Zelda game alone will take up half the memory.
Yeah, but I think that it has external storage on it. Like you can put in a high capacity like micro SD card or something like that. So whatever, another $30 on top of the cost. Oh well.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, $30 is not that much of an inconvenience for somebody else, et cetera, and on down the line.
Et cetera, another game, right?
What's that?
For someone else, that it's that or another game.
Right. Yeah. Like, does anybody else have any like, you know, just reactions to that announcement? There's going to be a little bit more information coming on down the line, but
I hope I have friends who get it so that I can play with them.
That's
how I do every Nintendo console, is I wait for somebody who I know gets it, and then I play it there.
Well, PAX South, I want to go check out Nintendo's booth there.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing, Ben.
All right.
Yeah, so you're going to, we're going to have feet on the ground. Yeah. Very cool. So yeah, sorry I monopolized us with that, but I just wanted to make sure we addressed it a little bit. Let us cut in. Jolly, you have something that might, that might relate to this.
GameStop is struggling and slowly dying. And the reason why I picked an article about this in particular is not because this surprises anybody, because as physical game sales start plummeting down the hole, of course, game stores that sell physical games are not going to be as lucrative of a business. It's basically, once upon a time, I used to work for Borders Books, and you know what happened to that? Mm-hmm. Amazon killed it. So it was pretty much the same situation. So it looks like GameStop is dying its slow death, and it's trying to diversify its non-gaming business by selling Apple products through its Simply Mac stores, prepaid phone plans through Cricket Wireless, and, you know, collectible crap like Pokemon memorabilia and whatnot, which, you know, they've had for a while, but they're trying to, like, up their game on that. Because their shares are down like 16% in the last 12 months, and they're doing, you know, like way worse overall. And they're kind of hoping to get a boost with the Switch, but more or less, like, you know, you're not going to be, I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to hang in, you know, like that's, it looks like they're going the way of Borders did.
Yeah, so. I would not hold my breath on the Switch bringing them out. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's, it's kind of like Borders tried to do the whole e-reader thing, like, as its last gasp. And then right after that, like, not too long after that, Borders just went away.
Yeah,
and it's like, you should have gotten in. You should have gotten in on those e-readers a long time ago when B&N was doing that.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And, you know, there were multiple other problems that company faced.
But what in the world was Borders e-reader?
They didn't even have, like, their own proprietary e-reader. They just had a bunch of third-party e-readers that they pulled in, and they had this big kiosk that they tried to unload on everybody. But they didn't have the whole shtick that, like, B&N had with their Nook, you know, where you could read the stuff in the store and try stuff out and all this other stuff. They didn't have any of those features, and they just couldn't compete with B&N's Nook, and they couldn't compete with Amazon, and they couldn't compete with Half Price Books or other, you know, used bookstores. So, you know, like, they had like a used book online thing that they could, you know, order books through, but it wasn't any, you know, faster or anything than just going down the street to the Half Price. So it didn't make it, you know, like, there was nothing really to save it. And they tried you know, doing the same thing, diversifying what they would sell, and expanded like this whole kind of Hallmark store type of thing going on. And I don't know, they did all different kinds of stuff trying to like scrabble to save the business, and it just did not work. And that's what I'm reading in this article about GameStop. They're doing the same thing. So I'm like, yeah, they're probably not going to be around all that much longer. So, yeah, that was it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So I'm only concerned about this insofar as, like, does this reflect on general sales across the industry? Like, you know, are sales for everybody down, by which I mean the amount of money going to publishers and developers to make new stuff? Or is this just, does this just reflect GameStop's kind of bad business model of being brick and mortar, appealing only to people's parents? Who are probably looking for a better deal anyway, and also just pushing them used sales.
According to the article, it was talking about how Target and Best Buy are also suffering from the same problems with selling video games, but those stores sell other items, so the video game losses are not a big deal. But GameStop is dedicated to games, so, you know, that's why they are having so many issues. So yeah, it's like overall physical games stuff is just not selling as much because you can download it on your computer or whatever to your console direct. You don't need to, you know, go get a physical game. So
cool time to sell all your stocks in that place.
Do you think after working there for 8 years and seeing how that company runs, I would ever touch their fucking stock, Ben?
I just assumed you were partners at the company.
Oh my gosh, I worked there for 8 years and I never rose above Game Advisor because I was doing things like going to school. But oh my gosh, they've spent so much time and money and effort pushing against publishers and pushing against any kind of like effort toward just like digital distribution. Like if they put half of that into like diversifying their fucking business. And like they've done a little bit of that, like with, you know, the, just buying other companies like Kongregate or ThinkGeek or whatever. That's small, like small potatoes as compared to like fixing their fundamentally outdated business model. And, you know, instead of just saying to Sony, like, hey, we're not going to stock the PSP Go because you sell things online and we can't, we like that doesn't get us any money.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like a moral failing or anything. Like, it sounds like I'm coming down hard on the company for that. But, like, I don't know. Like, just they probably, you know, they saw the writing and they decided to try and fix other people as opposed to fix themselves, which is not the not the way to go.
Whoever was making the decisions realized that they could just stall long enough to get themselves promoted or retired or whatever and didn't have to worry about actual long-term success.
Achieve escape velocity out the top into someplace else.
Well, I'll tell you that at Borders, they had high turnover rate on their CEOs during the last several years of the business being around. So, you know, that just sounds exactly like what happened to Borders. So, and that made me sad though, because I liked Borders. But
I mean, like I don't know. For some reason, bookstores have a lot more goodwill. That may just be me being like prudish and outdated and just a fucking snob saying, "Ooh, reading is good, but games are bad," which is not the case.
What's funny is there's a sense of nostalgia. Oh, go ahead.
Well, even to this day, when I go into a B&N, I'm just like, the enemy. And it's partially, but the thing is that like B&N's atmosphere, like they have their employees dressed differently. Borders was way more laid back and, you know, just kind of like the cool, chill place that you go, and all the employees were great. And just any store I went into, even before I worked there, was just awesome. So, you know, like it was just a different atmosphere than Barnes & Noble. And that's why I was, you know, heartbroken when it went away. So
man, I'd love to meet some Walden Books. We had one of those in the mall and I would go there, and that was like the only place that that carried, like it was the only place outside of like the kind of skeevy comic shop that I didn't want to go to very much. The Walden Books carried D&D books, so like I bought my like my third edition set stuff at Walden Books, you know, that tiny little cramped shitty, you know, like half lot store in the Richland Mall in Mansfield, Ohio.
We'll see. Walden Books got eaten by Borders.
Mm.
So, yep. So anyway.
Yeah. Poor game. Not poor GameStop. I don't know.
Oh, the death of an industry. Okay. the physical game industry anyway. Like, yeah. The thing is that the way that the AAA companies are trying to push their physical sales is just by, here, let's have this ultra special collector's edition of, you know, $200 or whatever the hell for all this crap that you want to have sitting on your shelf. And maybe every once in a while there's a game that you really like that you're really going to like because it's one in a series and you just want that stuff. But, you know, we had that conversation before about your mm-hmm. tipless daddy and, you know, my whatever the hell Skyrim dragon thing that's sitting on my shelf that just kind of sits there. And I was less impressed with Skyrim than other games in the series, but anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Ben, tell me about this, this AMA.
So my main story is the Mario one, but, just as an aside, Gabe Newell did an AMA on, Reddit, like just a couple hours ago from when we recorded. Not a whole lot of information was divulged, and a couple of people asked about Half-Life 3, and he didn't really say anything. I think the only fun details he mentioned is he said his favorite game that Valve's put out has been Portal 2, and his rationale for it was that he didn't have anything to do with, like, the design decisions of it, so he didn't, like, he said that when he looks at Half-Life, it's hard not to look at his long list of, like, compromises that he had to make the game, which, not that it's, like, necessarily a bad thing, but, like, there's just a lot of, like, tied up emotion in it, so.
Yeah,
that was just a fun link for you guys to look at, though. That wasn't necessarily a news story. But yeah.
What do you think makes someone decide, like, yes, now is the time?
I mean, everybody so all the people who normally, whenever Gabe Newell sneezes, say, oh gosh, Half-Life 3 is coming. Like, there were people saying, hey, this is the opening salvo in them getting ready to announce this new thing. Guys, it's not going to happen. Valve is a fucking mess. They're a holacracy. Like, nobody is anybody's boss. Nothing gets done aside from the things that make them money, which is, you know, optimizing Steam to sell you shit. Give up the dream. It's dead. There's no sense hoping for anything. Buy other stuff.
That said, he did say that they're working on a few single player games, but they just haven't announced them yet.
Right.
But yeah, that was another thing that he mentioned as well, because a lot of people are asking about CSGO patches, and he's like, well, people work on what they want to work on here, so there's 20 to 30 people who work on that, but people work where they think that they are most valued or what they enjoy working on the most.
Yeah.
So,
God, that makes me so angry.
Why? Because I don't think people are going to enjoy working on, like, let's optimize Steam as a program. That's probably going to be like, let's work on something interesting.
But that's what they're doing. Like, that's where the majority of their staff are deciding to work on their stuff is optimizing Steam and working on the sales platform. Yeah, no, it's a holacracy thing that makes me upset, which is the whole, hey, we don't have any bosses or goals. We're just going to have people work on what they feel like working on. You know what I feel like working on? Drinking beer and jerking off. So I'm going to be over here. Yeah.
Oh, man. You're going to have to join the conference room for that is over there. There's about 20 people.
That's on the second floor.
Yeah. Just watch your step. Gross.
Honey, I told you not to bring work home with you.
Yeah. And no, I don't have my doubts that there are good intention people there who are trying to make awesome stuff for us to play. But I don't know. Just at this point, it's become its own kind of inward twisted thing, trying to follow the development of that game. And just, I have no faith it's going to happen.
I think companies work like that when they have the right type of people working there. And I think Valve has that situation. So
I just want them to make cool stuff that's not fucking Dota. I wouldn't take Dota away from anybody, but it's just not my jam. It makes them tons of money and it brings a lot of people joy.
But I don't like it, so fuck it.
No, I mean, but I just mean it's very hard for me to get excited about that being the apparent priority over the past couple of years as they've tried to build that up. You know, just I want them to make stuff that I would like, And no matter how much I can intellectually understand how advantageous it is for them to work on bringing that to bear and making it as good as they can make it, like that makes a ton of people happy. There's always going to be a small, dark, just ashen cinder at the heart of me that cannot brook somebody doing something that is not made explicitly for me. Dennis, round us out with a company that actually is making single player first person shooters with awesome stories.
So Titanfall 2 has announced its new mode, and it's called Counter-Strike.
Oh wait, shit, when I said that thing, I was talking about the main campaign of Titanfall 2, which apparently is really, really good, and I'm just waiting for it to get to a price that I'm comfortable with. But so Counter-Strike, live fire, pilot only, so it is just people running around shooting each other.
Yeah, so like let's take the one, not the one thing, but like the biggest thing about this game, like the whole it's in the name, damn it, like the Titans, these big giant robots that you can battle with, are like what this game is centered around. And let's do a mode that just kind of removes that. Mm-hmm. And you can only have pilots or soldiers or whatever they call it in Counter-Strike. And it's, you know, I think it's like 5v5 or something like that, elimination, so no respawning, best of 5 rounds. And that, like, you know, they've designed a couple new maps, you know, just for it. And hey, like, this versus new content, fine. But it just struck me as supremely odd that their new mode eliminates their single biggest differentiator. Like, that just seemed weird to me. Now, I furiously Googled and was relieved to see that thankfully there is a Titans only mode. So they do not in Titanfall have a pilots only mode without a Titans only mode. There is a Titans only mode. But even then, like, the Titans only mode is like, you know, everyone starts in a Titan. Once you're knocked out, you can't get a new Titan, but you can still like play as a pilot. And you know, try to help your team, which, you know, that holds together for me. It just feels so weird to be like, yeah, we're going to start you, you know, we're going to take what this game is known for, which is giant robots, big arenas, and these kind of multi-scale battles. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to eliminate an entire half of it so that it, I imagine this is going to play a lot like, Counter-Strike, because there's, you know, no respawning, like it.
They got wall running at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it that made me think of, what was it? Brink.
Oh yeah. Brink. I forgot about Brink.
Yeah. So this is now at best it's Brink.
Mm-hmm. That's grim.
it just seems like a real weird decision. So that's coming. It's mm-hmm. again, nice to see him putting out free content. Like, I'm not gonna say that. Just the weirdest possible thing they could have chosen to do for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear that it is Respawn working toward their strength, which is this fast-paced human scale combat. I mean, this is the Call of Duty team after all. And also, this is low-hanging fruit, especially if a Titans only mode was there before. So like, maybe they are satisfying some need that wasn't there before. I have no stake in Respawn, but, you know, so it makes no sense that I would like white knight them. But
yeah, well, generally they do good stuff, so I should give them that. It just strikes me, this strikes me as the Final Destination no items mode, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, like, well, there you go.
No,
you,
Titans,
you pandered to my prejudices, so there we go.
I put this in a language you could hate.
So it's like a mode that favors skill over luck then.
Oh my god!
I think we've entered a neighborhood where no productive conversation can happen.
But like, for comparison, this would be like having Overwatch, except none of the characters have unique powers.
Mm, yeah.
Or, you know,
it's Overwatch, but everybody's Soldier 76 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's like literally with a little bit of wall. So. So yeah, just interesting. I'd call it out.
Yeah. I really have no basis to talk about this aside from just what I've heard about. I haven't played the game. I'm curious about the single player. If I got it, I would never play multiplayer anyway. So,
yeah.
That sounds like a brief to me.
It does.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question. But no, 1,000 times no. This time it's a free play multiplayer. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Bark, bark, bark. Yeah, sorry.
Gronk.
I paused for a second and thought that I had a soundboard right here, but I was actually just tapping on a pen on my desk. I thought I was playing a LARP. Did I mention I didn't sleep last night? Yeah. No, just all right, lay, all right. Just lay there all night getting pissed. What's that?
All night getting pissed?
No, just laying in bed. Like, why won't you fucking fall asleep, Ross?
Okay.
Yeah.
You refer to yourself by your last name?
No, it's just funny. It makes me sound angry when I'm talking about myself. But no, this is a free play multiplayer where we instead have you ask us the questions. And these are fresh ones. Don't worry if we don't get to yours. They're going to be banked away for later stuff. I'm going to lead
us. And we made good on that promise recently, even though I wasn't on the episode. But I was very proud of us for after months and months of saying, we're going to catch up on these. We caught up on them.
Yeah,
so.
We didn't catch up on them. There's plenty of them still. But it's, the check is in the mail. Like these are being squirreled away. So Franz asks us, inspired by the question, what is your favorite video game song? This can be a song from a video game, a song about a video game, or just a song that makes you think of a game.
All right, Space Oddity, Alan Wake.
That's good.
Yeah, that is a great one.
Yeah. See also Angry Johnny. God, Alan Wake's soundtrack is so goddamn good. When the credits roll on chapter two and they just like straight up roll Poe, and they're like, okay, this is made specifically for me.
I'm going to say Sublime's Love Is What I Got when it's played at the beginning of, it's Saints Row 3.
Yeah.
And you're just driving with your friend, and the entire segment is just about driving with your friend in the car and both belting out that song, and it is perfect.
Strangely enough, the only context in which Sublime is okay. And I don't mean okay like qualitatively, I just mean okay as an acceptable.
No, I'll say on both fronts. Like, I generally hate Sublime. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I just have an unreasonable dislike for that band, except for Love Is What I Got, which like you can't not like. So
yeah. Similarly for that Bismarcky song, you got what I need, in Saints Row 4, they use that as well, mm-hmm. which is pretty great. Jala, you got anything?
I would say that I have two favorite songs at the moment, but they're just tied to fitness stuff. Like Grinder's Blues from Rochard, because I had my belly dance class do like this Golden Age of Belly Dance warm-up sequence to that song. Mm-hmm. So, oh, like, nice. We were all doing, like, Golden Age of Belly Dance, old school belly dance to the tune of the Grinder's Blues song, which was pretty fun. And then the other thing is probably World Revolution from Chrono Trigger, because when I hear it when I'm running, because it's on my running playlist, like, anytime it pops up, like, I just run faster, because it's, mm-hmm. like, you know, the Lavos end fight music. So.
Yeah. That'll get you. You don't go for the Magus fight.
That one sometimes, but it's a lot slower. If you want something to run to, you know, like you got to have a fast beat. So
yeah, you want something that's gonna get up there. Yeah. Gosh. So this is really hard, because most of the music that I listen to, it's for background. Most of the game music that I listen to is for background noise. So why don't we jump in here and say, Laura's theme or whatever from Silent Hill 2, the main song, like that Akira Yamoka channeling, Angelo Badalamenti, in that intro, for Silent Hill 2. Sorry. yeah. let's just say that, like, that is like just a timeless song from an amazing game. And like, it just brings up a whole bunch of stuff, and I would listen to it even if it wasn't associated with my favorite game of all time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So I'm just going to read these because, you know, we don't have to circle around meeting everybody. So Michael writes, what is your favorite game to recharge your batteries when you've had a tough week at work, family trouble, or whatever ailment? What is your go-to digital vacation sport? As a kid, my eerie quiet of Klonoa 2's later levels, soothed my soul. Now, sadly, my PS2 is gone. Lately, I favor finding a quiet corner of Fallout 4. There, I dress up my corner of the apocalypse to watch the sea while listening to Golden Oldies.
Like it.
Yeah. So
for me, I've got a couple stuff, a couple things off the top of my head, which is one, pinball, specifically Star Wars pinball. That's just the Zen pinball program that I have. I will go back to that whenever I feel like just I want to, you know, do something low effort and a ton of fun for an evening. And I'm always surprised by how quickly I kind of get the rhythm back. And then the other thing is Hearthstone, which I you know, talk about on the show intermittently, but I literally have not missed a daily quest for Hearthstone in probably months now. Like, I play it every single day. And so winding down for bed or when I have a break at work or, you know, any of that stuff, that is my go-to game. Especially, he mentioned, you know, if like you're in a bad mood or something like that, I'll just bust out a Pirate Warrior, which is like a super aggressive you know, deck that people hate right now, because if it draws well, it just runs people over. And if it doesn't draw well, you can still find ways to win. But it's just, it's one of those decks that you just feel like a dick playing. Sometimes you just want to feel like a dick, you know? You just go out on the ladder and just stomp on some people as best as I can when I'm in a bad mood. So,
yeah. Nice.
I'll go.
Good.
I was going to say, I'll go with mine. If I have friends to play with, then something like Rocket League or like another multiplayer like shooter game would be my like stress reliever, recharge batteries type thing. If it's just myself, usually it's something more like an app like Sudoku or like 2048 or something like that.
Yeah, those are any of those. Mine might be similar. Drop 7 on the iOS, which is a fantastic numbers-based kind of Tetris puzzle game kind of thing. Failing that, like if I want to be just like a little bit more engaged, any kind of like portable JRPG where it's easy enough to optimize the system and watch the numbers work out in your favor. And the Vita and 3DS are great for that. Jala, how about you?
Well, it depends. If I have people to play with, anything co-op, it really doesn't matter what, just to spend time with people. If not that, then, usually I like something that's open world, like going and wandering around in Morrowind or something like that, you know, where I'm just doing whatever the hell I feel like doing and just exploring and looking around and making my own quests. If not that, like if I'm really tired and I just want to like lay in bed, then some kind of random visual novel, or maybe I'll go and play 80 Days or something, you know, something like that.
80 Days is a really good answer.
Yeah. So that's one that I would play, because that's just kind of like a chill out and just read the story and just kind of hang, you know. So.
You know, freeze to death in the Arctic. Yeah.
Only if you're bold.
Oh, yeah.
I have a story about a cryotherapy tank. I had an experience with that on Sunday. So that's like minus 200 degrees liquid nitrogen being pumped into you to a little tank where you're naked. So I've very briefly for a minute and a half experienced the Arctic.
Well, I mean, was that post-marathon like recuperation stuff?
Yes, I'll talk about it more later. But anyway, yeah.
Are we several hundred years in the future right now? And I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Probably. Yeah.
I am Robo Dennis.
Oh, we forgot to tell you, Jala, we're all robots now. Chase writes, if you could temporarily erase one piece of media from your memory, so you could experience it again for the first time, what would it be? So not just games, but any kind of piece of media.
Oh, wow. I'd been thinking in terms of games. That's tough.
Well, see, for me, I'll just give a real short and sweet answer. I wouldn't, because I'm not the same person as I was whenever I experience whatever media I have a soft spot for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like time and place for everything, you know, like, nope. Sorry.
I'm tempted to say Knights of the Republic, but the graphics might not be, because the one thing is, I don't know if you experienced it as you did back then or now. Right. So right. The graphics might not be good now, and I might not have the time now to play it as many times as I did when it came out. So I might go with Portal 2 or The Last of Us instead, because I feel like those graphics and stories hold up.
Yeah. I would say, like, I maybe these answers are 4 or 5 years out of date, but I've gone to these in the past. either Mass Effect 2 or...
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, or the entirety of Breaking Bad. It'd be amazing to watch Breaking Bad again and feel the same, just kind of like in the moment, breathless tension that I did, you know, those Sunday nights between 2008 and 2013. Yeah.
I actually, so this is good. I wasn't going to say Mass Effect 2 before you did, but I might piggyback on that because my sister just started playing it.
Oh, wow.
And so my PS3 kind of kicked the bucket and stopped reading physical copies of games, and so I gave all my PS3 games to her, and she's been working her way through like Uncharted and everything like that, and she, you know, was texting me the night being like, I've started Mass Effect 2 and it's so freaking amazing. And I was like, oh my god, yeah, I've started that game literally 3 or 4 times and have never actually finished it.
Yeah, your first run was derailed by the burglary, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I had the, you know, the system literally taken away from me, and then I lost the disc in my garage. Then I found the disc in my garage, started again. But I think this is specifically.
And then
this
you lost my copy of Silent Hill Homecoming, but that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. <Ooh. laughs> that was stolen. Come on now. in the sequence of events, that goes with the first one.
Yeah.
But specifically, as I was texting with her about it, I realized that I've restarted the game so many times that it's ruined for me, because I've literally played the first third of that game probably 3 or 4 times, and layered on top of that every time is like, oh, what did I do last time? This seems vaguely familiar. Oh, I remember I picked this answer last time, but it wasn't exactly what I meant, so I'm going to pick the different answer. Like, I keep on revising myself to where I can't have a good experience with that game anymore because there's so much unfinished history. So I would love to be able to just erase all that, start from a blank slate, and be able to play it, enjoy it, because it's an amazing game. Mm-hmm. And I know the story is as amazing as the gameplay is, but I've just like revised, you know, written over that first part of it so often that I can't enjoy it anymore. So I would love to get rid of that one and come back to it fresh.
Yeah. And then like, I want to apply just like a little bit of fuzzy logic, because there are two kind of neighbors to Mass Effect 2. That would be pretty great to go back to blank slate. Those being Alpha Protocol and Walking Dead Season 1.
I feel like Alpha Protocol just has like an infinite number of endings.
That's the thing too, right? Like every time I've played Alpha Protocol, it's gotten better because I've seen the way it articulates. So maybe I don't need this magical memory machine to you know to really you know, giddy up with that. Hmm. Huh. So let's see here. Brandon writes, having any sauce and any 5 toppings of your choosing, what would be your perfect pizza?
Ooh, I don't even have to blink. So barbecue sauce as the base, obviously.
Okay.
Grilled chicken, jalapenos, and onions.
Mm.
Don't need to dress it up any more than that. And that was like my go-to throughout college, and is still, specifically if I can, and I know I'm gonna make some enemies here, but from Domino's.
Maybe you might make some enemies there. No, it's fine. Yeah,
but yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah, I would move that we keep a manufacturer out of the out of this, just because that might end up that, you know, it's like if somebody comes out, like I love Adriatico's, and just like Adriatico's would be the pizza I would get, but I think that might alienate a certain number of people. I think we're talking about a combination of flavors here.
Sure. I've gotten it from Papa John's. I've gotten it from any number of places, and it's still good.
But Domino's preferably. is the one that does. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm curious what you're going to say.
All right. I will keep the manufacturer of this pizza out of it, but my favorite pizza, the ingredients are gorgonzola, fig preserves, prosciutto, parmesan, and balsamic glaze. It's pretty tasty.
Oh, that sounds...
Oh, you fancy.
That sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm pretty basic with my pizza. I like some meats, so I'd love a very spicy sausage, maybe with some some like roasted or kind of like pan fried or grilled garlic. Like, I love it when there's just like dices of clove garlic in the pizza. Maybe with you know, like a multi cheese kind of thing. And I also am a fan of onion on a thing. I don't need to use all 5. I think 5 might be a little bit overkill.
Yellow or red? Or white or red?
I don't like yellow onions. So so yeah, let's go with let's go with like the white onion.
Okay.
Just because those have a nice like bright bitter flavor to them. And they cook up nice. I think yellow onions when you cook them, they get all like limp and just come off in strings. Jala, how about you? I know that you're vegetarian, so I'm curious what would constitute a good pizza
vegetarian
for you?
Therefore what would a pizza be? Oh my god.
Not that. I'm just like you're going to come up with like flavors that I wouldn't even think of because like I can just load it with sausage and be a-okay.
No, not really. Like I make my own pizza at home, so I will specify that I would like my own whole wheat honey flax crust that I make at home, and that I probably my own roasted red pepper marinara, although I also am partial to barbecue sauce, but I like my roasted red pepper marinara probably a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And jalapenos, because they're like a namesake / nickname. red onions, probably goat cheese or feta, something like that. Like I like a sharp cheese, a sharp taste of a cheese. I like garlic and mushrooms. I don't know. I pile on a lot of things when I make a pizza. I will find a picture and I will put it in there so you can see what a Jala pizza looks like. It's fucking huge and it's sturdy and you need a beer and you need a friend and you need some kind of a shitty movie to watch while consuming this thing. So give me 1 second and I will show you what it looks like.
Yeah, those last three requirements make it way more attractive to me.
Oh yeah, I mean pizza. Yeah, a lot of pizza is about context.
Okay, here we go. Give me 1 second. I'm getting the photo.
I forgot to mention my sauce. I like marinara, but I don't like a sweet marinara. I like an either tart or spicy marinara.
Okay. Well, see, I do a roasted red pepper marinara, so and mine has spice to it. Hmm. So I like a spicy thing. So go. Picture of pizza.
I'm looking in the backstage. Ah, there we go.
There it is.
That looks very good.
Yeah. So
yeah.
It's a big pizza.
Ooh, yes, it is.
Let's see here. Sam writes, did you regularly read any video game magazines back when those were more of a thing? Any titles, columns, writers, cover discs, etc. that you particularly loved or hated? Game magazines, go.
EGM and GamePro.
Oh, high five.
I
have the same. In fact, I have every EGM and every GamePro that I've ever gotten here on a shelf beside me here. So like GamePro's from 97 to 2002 and EGM from like let's say 99 through 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I was way into those. Like GamePro, it was just a thing. I stopped getting it once EGM was really a thing for me, and like EGM spawned so many great games writers and people that I still follow to this day. People from like 1UP, and just they went on to do like foundational podcast stuff. Like it is unsurprising but still completely true. EGM for life. Ben, what were you gonna say?
I don't really have any like magazines necessarily, but I would say that I followed game trailers like Game Reviews when they still made those. And so I was disappointed to see those go. But
did Game Trailers get bought out by somebody?
I think they just ended. Mm. I think the website is just over.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm glad that you said EGM because I knew I subscribed to one when I was a kid and could not remember the name of it, but it was EGM. So thank you for that. I also subscribed to Game Informer on and off for several years, just because you kind of have to if you ever buy anything from GameStop.
Yeah, if you ever drove past a GameStop, they would just paperboy like 5 copies of Game Informer into the side of your car.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can't avoid that. but yeah, that feels about right. Ben Kuchera from Polygon is a favorite writer. I'm not sure exactly where he came from, but he lives in Cincinnati, so that makes him okay by me.
Does he? I had no idea that Ben Kuchera lived here. I see his opinion pieces a lot.
Yeah, he's like a dad of like 5 kids or something crazy like that, and he lives in Cincinnati. So freaking personal hero right here.
I don't always agree with his takes, but I like how brilliant, like you cannot look askance at his proliferation, how prolific mm-hmm. he is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had no idea he was a local boy. That's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. gosh, two more. I would always get like Nintendo Power when I liked the game that was on the cover. And that was like how I experienced Harvest Moon or Chrono Trigger, you know, when I couldn't actually get those games. Also EGM2 or Expert Gamer, which were just these magazines that were miniature strategy guides and like tips and tricks kind of things.
EGM
also tips and tricks.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. EGM Square, something like that. Like it was a side publication a little bit. Yeah.
No figure.
let's see here. Let's do one more. One and a half more. Let's do that. Sorry, because there's one down here that is not going to preserve very well, and I want to make sure that we get to it. Jonathan writes, if you suddenly had twice as much free time or no podcast related obligations, what game would you start playing right now?
So I think
Dark Souls.
That's a good one.
I have an easy answer for this too.
Ben?
I don't think I would pick out a specific game, but I would just work through my backlog faster.
Yeah. Sorry.
I need to pull up my Steam library to look at this, because I know I've had stuff staring me in the face.
I'll say mine. I would play and beat Nier as soon as possible so I could be ready for Nier Automata, because that weird setting and that kind of weird lead designer mixed in with Platinum seems like it is right up my alley, and just the only thing that is missing is literally any history with the series aside from playing the first 2 hours of Nier One.
So I'll tell you what, this is going to sound like a cop-out because it's a game I've played, but I would go hardcore into XCOM and XCOM 2 Iron Man mode, because like XCOM is a fantastic game to play in that kind of roguelike, every decision is saved and you have to hard start over if you lose kind of way. But each campaign is 60 plus hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to like grind away and get your experience and learn from your mistakes and everything requires a huge, huge time investment. And so I love the concept. I play those games so much and I always like peter out on 30 hours either because I lose or just because like I get too intimidated to make another move because I've got so much invested. I think if I had like all the time in the world to open up, I would go hardcore into that.
Yeah. Ben, I'm gonna put your feet to the fire because backlog is not the right thing to say, I don't think. And the answer cannot be more Rocket League, even though that is very much, I think. I like it. It is a reasonable enough answer, but like, is there a big time consuming thing that you either have access to or have started playing that you would really like to just like knuckle down and power through?
I'll give this as an answer. I do not plan on playing Final Fantasy 15 because it seems like it's too long of a game and that I will not have enough time playing it. However, if I did not have the time that it takes to go to a job, then I would probably play Final Fantasy 15 if I had all the free time in the world.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yep, that works.
There you go.
So the final question here, Eric writes in, what names would you suggest for this little guy? 100%? We aren't 100%, but we have been calling him Little Bear. And Eric, longtime supporter of the network, participator in the shows, has shared with us a picture of a very adorable, I don't know what kind of puppy this is. It looks like it's got a little bit of German Shepherd in it a little bit. But it is a very fuzzy bear like puppy that is kind of like fresh in from the snow.
Aww. It is a cute little pluffy. I like the pluffy.
Yeah.
It's not hard because like I like all kinds of fluffy animals.
I want to floof that snoot. I think Little Bear is good because it definitely does with its fur pattern. It looks like a bear kind of. So go with LB, or why not Lyle? You know,
why not Lyle?
Why not Lyle? it's one step removed, right?
I've seen a lot of people, like, you know, use the word bear from, like, another language if they don't want to just call it bear, you know, mm-hmm. in English, like kuma or something, you know. So I've seen that as a popular way of rebranding it, so it's not completely yeah. apparent that you just called it, you know, this is my dog Bear, mm-hmm. you know. Then again, I mm-hmm. had a dog named Cat before, so
that's pretty
so
good.
So what do I know?
Yeah.
I so if you want to go the video games route, you could go Trico, which is the animal from Last Guardian. If you don't mind, if you don't mind naming it after a fantastic concept from a mediocre game. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I haven't played. I shouldn't throw shade.
Everybody's down on that thing, and they haven't played it. I haven't talked to a single person who's played it.
Yeah. And then you could just go the Fallout route and call it Dog Meat.
Hmm. Ben, I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
I always like people's names, so I would go something like Chester, maybe.
Hmm.
Something dignified. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Chester that way. Like, so I think it's important for a dog to have both a regular name and a nickname. So like Chester and then Chaz. I think this little pepper right here, this fellow, he looks like a Chaz to me.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna
bottom line. I want that dog.
It's a pretty good dog.
I want all of them. They are all cute. And what's funny is, like, in the Slack, when one person posts a picture of their animal, everyone, it's like starts a chain reaction.
It's like they're playing dog poker. Is what's happening. Like they're trying to trump each other with their doggos or their cats. Yeah.
Or their whatever. In my case, every once in a while, I'll throw in my bird or my lizard just because. Oh, yeah.
Well, you got to represent the cold bloods, you know. Do birds have cold blood? I have no idea.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
No.
Okay. Oh, well. They're basically lizards. I have no idea.
Let me sun myself. Okay. Yes.
So thank you, everybody, for participating in this free play. I'm sorry we couldn't do more, but we have saved them. This has been a good amount of fun. Just the right, not too much, but a good amount. I'm not kidding. It was way too much fun. If you want to look out for more of those, hang around on the Facebook page, on Tuesday afternoons, either Dennis or Jala will post those. Which one of you was it this time?
That was me.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Yeah.
Remember, I didn't even know if I was going to be on.
Oh yeah. Jala, it was like a last half hour substitution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how to end the segment, so
the grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past week or so. Playing might be a bit of a misnomer, because Jala, you have a major life accomplishment behind you right now, and I'm curious to hear about that, because you've been talking about training about your marathon, or training for your marathon for a while now. And I'm well, no, it's like, it's a huge deal. Like, not everybody can say they've done that. So I'm curious how the day went.
Well, let me say that, no, I did not die. No, I did not have an injury. So that's
good
news.
We're robots and Jala's a ghost now.
No. I'm all good. I actually am feeling pretty good afterwards, because I had my cross training and my overall training, running training on point, and my preparation pre and post marathon was right where it needed to be. I have to tell you about the cryotherapy. So after the marathon, I tried cryotherapy for the first time, where they put you in a tank and they put you in, you know, put freezing air into the tank with you, and it like lowers your body temperature. And I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's because all the blood rushes up to your core to like keep your core warm.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, to keep you alive or whatever. Oh. Just like, I don't know. It does something. It does something like that, where
it draws your blood back out to the extremities. So it's not enough to induce like the frostbite response where tissue dies. Is it more to head off the inflammation response?
Yeah, it's mostly to head off the inflammation response, but also it does get the blood flowing and things like that. I followed that up with jumping into these Nido compression boots that I didn't even know existed. They are Normatec compression boots where they basically fill up with air in segments from your feet going all the way up your leg, and they do the essentially the same thing, pushing the blood up through your legs and then releasing it back out again. And then, you know, anyway, so I was stuck in a freezing tank, and it was great because I'm friends with a guy who owns the cryotherapy place, and he was just like, oh, this is going to be good, because he was just like waiting to see my expression, because he just wanted to see, you know, me have a reaction to being put in this freezing cold environment for a minute and a half, because, you know, he just watches everybody with, you know, sadistic glee, because he's a coach.
Right. How loud did you shout, fuck?
Back or shit. Come on now. You know I feel nothing. So, like, I had poker face, and he was like, he was just like, are you even shivering? And I'm like, yeah, I am. And he's just like, and I'm just sitting there talking to him like normal. And he, you know, he's like, you're not, your teeth aren't chattering. You are not moving around. Oh my God. And I'm like, yeah, show no fear, show no pain. You know, like, I used to be a typo instructor. You think I want my students to know when I'm tired? Fuck no. I want them to think I can go forever, even if I'm tired, you know? So, and the same thing happened when I was at the marathon. Like, I paced myself out, and I finished out the marathon, and when I was done with the marathon, the people in my running group were like, you look fresh, like you could still keep running. And I'm like, I feel like I got hit by a truck, but I'm like, okay, sure. But, you know, like, I've got my head up and I'm looking forward, and, you know, like, I'm still able to go and still whatever. And, you know, so anyway, so the day itself, the weather was hot. Not that that's a surprise. I live in the pit of hell. So this was actually the worst weather that they have had for the Houston Marathon in so many years that the average finish time for this was lower than it's been since the year 2000. So for 17 fucking years.
Wow.
So it was really hot, really, really humid. And then at mile 20, it started raining. So then I got soaking wet, and then I got wet socks and shoes, which weighed me down and then also caused me to have blisters because although I had put like Vaseline in all of my toes, all of that got rubbed off in the rain. So that was cute. But yeah, like when I was training, I was staggering my training between mornings and afternoons. So I was training outside in the heat as well. So I was pretty accustomed to it already. So I knew how to adapt to the conditions, but 8 people were hospitalized and 750 needed medical attention after this. So that's a pretty big number of people who just didn't know what the hell to do and pushed too hard or couldn't finish or whatever. So yeah, it was I finished just to give my time out there, 4 hours, 20 minutes and 13 seconds. Now my original goal was to do it in like 4 hours and 15 minutes. So I was only about 5 minutes off, but a lot of people in my running group were 25 minutes to an hour and a half slower than what they're going for. And not only that, but according to, you know, the science behind, you know, how temperature affects your running performance, if this had been like the average temperature that it normally is at this time of the year, I would have done a sub 4 hour marathon.
Holy shit.
So, like, I would have chopped off, like, over 20 minutes off my time. So, that's how drastically the temperature, you know, was, you know, up there. And even the fastest people in the running group were struggling during this race. So, but I was fine. I was cool. I was just, like, zenning out and listening to my video game music and running along. I got tired about mile 18. And that's when I started listening to all those wonderful audio messages that I got from everybody. And they made me smile and laugh. And I actually started running, like, although I had slowed way down at that mile, I started to run at the same pace that I had, you know, been keeping beforehand for another 2 miles until I ran out of messages. And then, then because I was in the middle of the rain, I ran out of messages. I got a blister and then, you know, whatever, stuff like that. Then I started slowing down again for the last several miles. But thanks to everybody who did stuff. The probably the funniest thing that happened is that Ollie had recorded a message for me that was like, I want you to look ahead of yourself and focus on that guy in front of you's butt. I pulled out my camera and I totally took a picture because right about then I happened to be like, because there's all different kinds of people who run these things, but I happened to be behind a shirtless dude who was buff, who had a nice butt. And I was like, I'm taking a picture. You know, and I just started laughing so hard. It was great. And, I also laughed at your message, Cole. And so I was just like having a field day. And right about the time when the rain started, it was when Jeremy's message came on. So I guess he pissed off the sky because he's the worst.
Because he's fucking Jeremy. Come on.
So, it was a lot of fun listening to all of that, and it really, like, it helped me keep going at least until I ran out of messages. So either I need a lot more of those messages, or I need to loop them, but they're not going to have the same impact the second time around,
right?
Or something. I gotta find some way to break that. But when I hit the wall, when I get really tired, I go external and I start trying to encourage all the people who are really struggling. And I'm like, come on, you can do it. Or I try to attach to people who seem to be running about the pace that I'm going. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just like, okay, they don't seem like they're stopping. I've got to keep up with them. You know, like trying to find people, you know, find reasons in the people around me, you know? So that's like, I'm kind of like a team player. Some runners, they get really mad. They get cranky and tired, and I'm not. I'm pretty pleasant. I'm just happy, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, we got to do this thing together, you know?
Yeah.
Our friendship and shit.
We all agree that this sucks. Why are we doing it?
Well, here's what you need to do is take all the messages that you got for this race, feed them into an algorithm that then randomly generates messages from for you ongoing.
There you go. So, but anyway, it's happened since then. Although you can't tell in my voice because I have that awesome poker face that extends to podcasting and my voice on podcasts. My uncle passed away in the last week, since the last time I was on the show. Yeah. And so my parents weren't able to go to the marathon. And so I still had a friend of mine who showed up. And so at mile 15, I got to go hang out with her for a second. And then other than that, like the lady from the Alzheimer's Association was like going nuts when she saw me because, you know, she had met me at the they had like a pasta party, like a pre-marathon pasta party carb loading thing. Mm-hmm. And so I got to meet the representative from Alzheimer's Association and talk to her. So when she saw me, the little cheer squad for Alzheimer's Association went crazy, and that was really cool.
And that was the organization that you were fundraising for, right?
Correct. Yeah. And not only that, but thanks to my friends, family, coworkers, and all of Duck Feed community, we raised under my bib a total of $1,336
for
Alzheimer's Association.
Nice.
When I started, I was like, if I get $500, I'll be happy. Like, you know, I don't know if I can get $500 from all these people, but like, you know, if I could raise $500, that would be great. And so I was so happy to be able to raise that much money because overall, runners raised $42,000 for Alzheimer's Association. And given the size of Houston and how many people probably were running for, you know, that particular organization, the fact that, you know, like over 1,000 of that was from, you know, under my bib, you know, that's mm-hmm. awesome. So I was really happy about that. So thanks to everybody who recorded messages or sent me, you know, messages or followed me, because I got all these pings from Slack when, you know, people were messaging and talking about, hey, does anyone know where Jala's at right now? Or Jala finished, this was her time, and stuff like that. And it was really great because those things popped up on my heart rate monitor watch. So I got to read, I couldn't reply to them, but I could see them when I was racing.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite things, there were some really fun things that I saw on the road. Like this race, like it turned out all of Houston and it was great. Like, I have never had the experience of actually saying, you know what, I think this would be a fun race to just go and spectate at, but fucking for real, this was a great race to go see, like just as a spectator or as a runner. It's just a fun experience because all these people just flooded the streets, and there were people, we ran through neighborhoods in Midtown, and all of the people would come out on their lawns with lawn chairs, and they would like hand out mints and tissues and bananas and stuff to the runners that they bought for from their own money just to give to the runners. And, you know, there were little kids screaming, "We believe in you," and like high fiving everybody, you know, all different kinds of stuff. And it was really great. And then all the people, like, they would cheer for you even if they didn't know who you were. There were people holding up signs that were like, "Go, random stranger, go." And the race would read off your name on your racing bib and then go, you know, call you by name. And my bib said Jolichon. So everybody was like, "Go, Jolichon." And I was like, "You gotta go. For me." And it didn't matter if I knew them or not. They said my name and I had to go, you know. And all the people from running group, like the people who came out to support them, they were cheering and going, "Go PAR," which is the, you know, acronym for my running group, Pearland Area Road Runners. And so, you know, like, I was like, "I got a call. They said it. They said the thing," you know. And I was, they had belly dancers out there, marching bands, a bagpipe guy, singers, bands. There was this dude who had a 3D Mario Brothers question block with an invincibility star above it. And it was like, like, oh no. And I totally did. I waded through everybody, ran over there, and then totally did the Mario jump to hit the block. You know, and I was like,
punched it out of his hands.
It broke. He was very sad.
No, I pulled the punch, of course. But, you know, anyway, it was fun. And so there were so many fun signs that people were holding up. Like, I read all the signs and I was like, people watching, you know, other runners and the people on the sides. And that was like so much fun. So some of the signs that I thought were great: "You think this is hard? Imagine dating you." Yeah.
Oh, God. was, yeah. Little passive aggressive.
Right? If Trump can, so can you.
If Trump can win, so can you. Is that what you said? There was a Skype glitch.
If Trump can run, so can you.
Oh, yeah.
I trained for months to hold this sign. For the guy who had a blow up monkey, and then it like, and had it holding a sign that said, "Seems like a lot of work for a free banana." There was another one: "In my heart, you were all Kenyans." Another one said, "Keep going, keep going. That's what she said."
Okay.
"Worst parade ever." And then there was one sign. My absolute favorite was just, it just said, "Why?" in all caps. pretty much. But so at mile 25, I want to say, and I'm almost done talking about this, but at mile 25, I was taking a lot of walk breaks because I did get a little bit lightheaded despite all of my preparation and the whatever I was doing. So at those times I would just have to slow up a little bit, you know, walk a little bit, you know, get some water, or, you know, shake my head, shake it out, and then keep going. And at mile 25, I'm like, I got another mile point two. Damn, you know. And this guy came up and he just was like, "Come on, you can do it." And just another running guy. And I was like, about my pace, I'm going to run with him. And I just decided I was going to run it with him. And I told him so. And he said, this is so stupid, but he said, "Thank you." You know, that he said, "Oh, thank you." You know, that I was going to run it with him. And then I was like, now I have to, because he said, "Thank you. I've got to do this thing. I can't stop and you know, say, sorry, I'm tired and I got to slow down. No, I have to run," you know? And so, like, I ended up running it in with this random guy named Robert, who was very sweet and nice. And he, like, was, you know, talking to me the whole way. And so in talking to somebody, it distracted me from the whole, I've got another mile point two to go, you know? And so we were able to go, at least until we hit downtown. And then there were so many people and they were cheering so loudly that I couldn't hear anything. Yeah. I couldn't hear Robert. I couldn't hear whatever was going on. And I was just like, my watch told me, okay, you're at 26.2. And I'm like, I haven't passed the 26 mile mark. Where is the 26 mile mark? And I finally hit that. And then it was like, it felt like forever until that last point two was finally done. And I'm like, where is the finish line? I couldn't see it because there was a turn, and then there was a finish line. I couldn't even, like, if I had seen it, then I would have probably broken to a stronger run, but I couldn't see it until like right up on it. And so anyway, I kind of figured that I would just be like, you know, super emotional at the end of it. My uncle passed away and I've been trying to like turn off my emotions and not think about that. And, you know, like I trained for like half a year for this thing and I did it and, you know, I did it safely and I finished in a pretty good time given the weather and everything. And oh my God. But no, I was just like, all right, so that's done. And I got my medal and I felt nothing. And I got my water and my banana and I moved on. And, it, you know, that's it. I took my finisher photos with Robert and then, you know, gave him a hug. He kissed the top of my head and, you know, wished me well and walked off. And that was that.
The end. Wow.
So I don't know. I've been recovering. I'm drinking my beer, which is my first alcohol, as I said, in a while. And I'll probably be, you know, like tomorrow I'm going to be doing belly dance again and I'll be probably doing running or some kind of cross training. Other cross training by the end of the week. So yeah.
What's your next kind of distance event that you're going to be getting ready for?
Well, the next big event that I'm going to be doing is going to be the Spartan Sprint. It's not very long distance. It's 3 to 5 miles. And the thing about it is that it's an obstacle course race. So that means there's going to be 5 to 30 obstacles. And I haven't been doing a whole bunch of like upper body work and I need to. So I've got like a month to get upper body work done and get, you know, a bunch of power stuff in so I can get ready for that. Because this year I'm going to do my Spartan trifecta, which is, you know, three races of differing distances, increasing distances. So the next one after that will be in May, and it will be in Austin. So Ben, Ben, Spartan Super, and all the people in Austin who listen to this show, because there's so many of you guys, you can come see me or maybe see me afterwards as long as I don't die during that race.
Is there any way you can like sneak in for like the last like 3 to 5 miles and run with a person, or is that not allowed?
I'm pretty sure that's not allowed, Ben.
Do you really want to piss off those people who are doing something called the Spartan?
Yeah,
that'd be the thing.
The super is 8 to 10 miles. You got time to drink. You should register. Somebody should do it with me because I don't. Yeah. I've not had somebody to like run an obstacle course race with yet. Anyway, that's like the next thing I'm gonna do is that.
Yeah.
So woo-hoo.
Yeah. So I mean that's a lot of time on a video game podcast talk about a non video game thing. But I'm proud of you. I'm proud of the people, you know, who came out to support you. Like, this is an amazing accomplishment. And like it is awesome to hear that it was like a 4-hour long party that the entire town came out for, seemingly. Like, that's amazing. You know, I just want to kind of heap that praise on you.
Well, the news said that this event is the largest sporting event that happens in Houston more than anything else.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the end, like that's it. but by the way, you know, David had that time that he was talking on the grind and he was talking about living in the place he lives. Yeah.
No, I wasn't giving you shit. I really wasn't. Okay. He was talking about that. That's a big thing in his life. You're doing that. This is big. Yeah.
I just had to be like, hey man.
Yeah. No, I was absolutely not like just saying like, oh, that went on longer than I thought. That was not my sentiment at all. Like, it is a worthwhile thing to talk about, because if you're angry about it, I don't know, you go run a marathon. I can't.
Well, I think I'm gonna be doing this after every single running event that I do ever.
Yeah.
It's just that this one in particular is like my first time ever doing something like this. And you know, the listeners had been, you know, especially the people in the Wellness Channel have been talking to me about this for a long time. They'd been involved. People sent me audio messages. They donated to my, you know, fundraiser for this. So, you know, the community was involved with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now let's talk about some video games. Tell me about some things.
So what you been playing, Jala? I know you haven't been playing anything. I just thought that would be a funny thing to.
I wasn't sure. I just kind of stopped, and I'm just like, I can't facepalm. I don't even know.
We shorted out Jala.
Ben, I'm curious what you've been up to. What? Right. I'm gonna volunteer you first.
Yeah. I'll talk about my go-tos. I played Darkest Dungeon. I played Rocket League. You know. I do have something to say about Darkest Dungeon. I played that for a decent amount of time this weekend. I did the Darkest Dungeon level, which is like the highest level, I assume. But it takes like level 6 characters to go through that, and I only have, I think, 5 of them, and you only can send 4 people per party. In my run through, I lost 2 of them. And I don't think I even got halfway close to the boss battle of it.
Yeah.
So that kind of discouraged me pretty heavily. Like, I don't know if I'm going to beat that game or not. Like, it's just a lot of work to get like another 2 level 6 characters. And like, everyone was outfitted with a good amount of gear and everything. They didn't have any debilitating like phobias or anything like that. So yeah. It's a little bit disheartening. So if anybody, either you guys or people on the channel, have advice for how to do well on that last level, I'd be definitely open to it.
I started playing Darkest Dungeon this week, so I am a fountain of wisdom, obviously.
Have you tried killing the enemies?
Ooh, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. That is all the advice that I have, and I hope that it's useful to you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might get back into it again. It's not a bad game. It's still a great game. It just discouraged me a little bit, but I don't know. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a good place for me to piggyback on, because I literally did start playing it this week. That's one of my games. And I think one of the most intimidating things about it for me is party comp. Like, okay. I vaguely, I get the idea of like, okay, the guys that have a lot of attacks, that start in the front should be in the front, and the guys that have a lot of attacks that work from the back should be in the back, and all that stuff. Like, you probably shouldn't put your healer on the front lines.
Wait, I'm taking notes here.
Yeah. Attack enemies.
But they're like, every character, every class has these moves that will either mark targets or move them in the comp of the party, and I have to imagine that like the highest functioning party that actually would be able to take on the Darkest Dungeon really leans heavy on shuffling people around in the order from like the 1 spot to the 4 spot, and leans heavy on the abilities that push them back and forth and synergies there. I just have no handle on the game yet to understand that. And that, I think that is the single thing that feels the most overwhelming to me. Is playing around with the movement techniques at all. Like, I have stuck exclusively to characters that stay in the place I put them, damn it. So far. So I guess my question to you is, are you of that philosophy? Like, do you kind of have your front row player and your back row player, and they kind of stay in that? Or has your party comp evolved to involve a lot of moving around?
So, yeah, I think my ideal party is a crusader in the front, Highwayman in the second position, occultist in the third position, and then a crossbow person or a dog person or kind of variable in the fourth position.
Wait a minute, I heard dog person.
Yeah, that's a what?
Is
hound, the hound master.
So it's not a dog what walks like a man. It is a man.
It's a dude with a dog.
Okay.
You get dog treats, makes your dog attack more, that sort of stuff. But the main component of the only thing that moves around a lot for me is the highwayman, the guy in the second position. There's 2 moves that I think are important for him. One is a lunging move, which moves him forward a position and attacks any of the 4 people in the enemy party. And then the next move that he has is a point blank shot, which does heavy damage and sends him back a position, back to the second place position. And so the first move that lunges him forward also activates what's called like a riposte. So if someone attacks him, he'll attack them back. So I kind of rely on that. So I hope that people attack him so that it deals damage to them. And then my third player, the occultist, will heal him if he needs it. Otherwise, he'll attack the other team. And I kind of rest on that kind of synergy. Gotcha. The crusader's just there to do damage. If you could replace him maybe with someone else, if there's someone else that was better. And then likewise, the person in the back could also just do damage. It doesn't matter as much. But there are some weird synergies, like the third place position, the occultist also has an ability to mark people. And then if you have the crossbow person with that, one of their attacks will do, I think, 1.5 to 2 times damage against marked people. So I try and like get those sorts of synergies going. But then again, the knight really doesn't do a whole lot with that. He's just there to either take damage or attack other people. So
yeah, I guess makes sense.
I guess the knight also does have a heal ability, so he can kind of be used in a pinch to heal somebody if he needs to. And then also the person with the crossbow also has a heal ability too that similarly can be used if you get in a bind. But
yeah, I imagine, like I said, the kind of party comp that would make it its way through the Darkest Dungeon to like shuffle around like a Rubik's Cube.
In
the battle. Like I'm not there yet. I have no concept of how to make that work. I just looking at the game and just that being so integral to the combat, I have to imagine anything that you know can win the game would operate in an incredibly complex way like that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the Highwayman's like the way to go in terms of like, yeah, there's no downside for him. I think because like the worst case scenario, if your party gets like shuffled, which can happen from time to time, he can just lunge his way up to the first position if he needs to, and then he gets back to the place that he needs to be, like without, you know, penalizing you for using like a movement as an action. So,
yeah, the Jester class, and I think David had complained about being really struggling to find a use for the Jester.
Yeah,
that has a lot of movement in it, and like I look at it and go, okay, that sounds impossible to navigate, but I bet that's integral to winning. Like it just seems like that kind of game to me.
Yeah, I know the Grave Robber also has a lot of movement based moves, or at least 2 movement based moves, but I haven't used her as much, so I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure this makes me want to. I think after this podcast, I'll probably look up in articles to see like if there's any recommended combos that are like optimal or any synergies like that.
I broke down almost right away and started going to a wiki for more basic things. I haven't looked specifically for what I'm describing now, but it definitely seems like a game that lends itself well to a wiki.
Yeah,
limited time with it.
It is pretty cool, like how deep the strategy is, though, from pretty simple components of just classes and 4 positions and different moves. But yeah.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of simple components, my God, I feel compelled to mention just the art style is like the definition of doing a lot with a little. Like at its heart,
I'm curious about that because it's very elaborate.
Well, are you
talking about the animations or things?
Yeah,
like
that's the thing. Like, is it style simplicity or animation simplicity?
That's there. Yeah. You're finding the nuance. Yeah. The animation simplicity, I guess, like the way, you know, fundamentally the characters don't do a lot of moving. Like they're not intricately animated.
There's a picture of them static. There's a picture of them attacking. And there's a picture of them being attacked. And that's true of like any characters. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they do anything in between, it is rigged like a puppet and it's tweened.
Yeah. I learned attacking themselves, which can happen if one of your people should happen to become a masochist, which is, it was kind of funny. Like it was just a frame of my guy headbutting his sword. So that happened. but everything else they do, they achieve a really, really cohesive, like you never notice that there aren't that many frames that the characters go through, because it fleshes it all out with like camera zooms and bringing stuff to the foreground and highlighting
sound effects are really good too.
Sound effects are great. Like it is. So yeah. So the style is masterfully done. The animation is very simple, but also combined with kind of the way the camera draws your attention to certain places or the way certain items are brought into the foreground during attacks. That makes you feel like you're seeing a really cool moment in time from the fight as it plays out, and kind of distracts you from the fact that there's not a ton of intricate animation going on. And I like really appreciated that. And please don't take it as any kind of slight me saying like, oh, there's not a ton of animation going on. They just were incredibly economical with what they chose to do.
I mean, that speaks to any visual works credit, which is they accomplish more with less, and also leaning on key poses as opposed to like lovingly animating every single strand of hair. I'm going to say it's a harder thing to do. Obviously the technical side of things are more difficult if you're trying to get that granular, but, making those tough choices and working within those limitations, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Motorcycle, for underlining. No, it's fine.
I rushed for the mute button.
Flipping you off.
Yeah.
I will say, just to round out our Darkest Dungeon chat, I thought it was very interesting. In XCOM, I've had countless soldiers die, but I've never actually abandoned a mission. Like, I've always seen things through until everyone was dead or I accomplished my objective. Whereas Darkest Dungeon, I totally had a moment where I freaked out and abandoned a mission.
You got to get that loot.
Yeah. But I think it was the right decision because, like, I was clearly about to lose a battle, so I ran away and it just put me outside the door. My requirement to complete the quest I was on was to finish every battle, but I was just out of healing supplies. All my people were like on death's door, and I knew to try to jump back in and finish that fight from the beginning, because I had quit it, was suicide. And so I abandoned the mission and saved my guys. And I have not had anyone die yet in Darkest Dungeon, which I'm sure will change.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's a very interesting contrast from XCOM, what I'm putting the priority on.
So later in the game, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler. Later, there's like difficult missions will come your way where you...
Wait a minute. The more you play the game, the harder it gets.
Yeah. All right. That's not the spoiler. But where the cost of retreating is that it will randomly kill one of your people. So, for example, doing the Darkest Dungeon, one of my people died. And so I had three people left. And so I had the choice of, can I see this through with three people? Which, no, you can't, because it's such a huge disadvantage by that point. So you have to retreat knowing that another person's going to die because you're retreating. And so that's like an added like salt in the wound of that decision. But yeah, it's painful.
I have yet to see a game do it well where you can lose a party member and not just have it be catastrophic. Because XCOM is very similar, where especially before you upgrade your party size, losing one character is losing 25% of your party. And it just, everything goes to hell in a handbasket unless you've got things so wrapped up that it was a complete fluke that the first guy died in the first place. So I'd be very interested to see, the way I'm thinking about it, the game would almost have to scale the difficulty with the number of people in your party and be like, hey, you can keep going. And we'll keep the level of difficulty the same as it was before, just scaled for three party members. So you might lose another person organically, or you can guaranteed lose another person by retreating, but save the other two. Like that's I haven't seen that done well anywhere.
I'll counter with a Battlefront. Like, you can lose a person in the battle and it doesn't really change things too much.
Battlefront.
The Star Wars game.
Yeah.
Where it's like, sure, 200 okay. people versus 200 people.
And... Well, okay. I mean, as a proportion.
in terms of like a turn-based strategy game.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Huh. You play anything else, Ben?
I did. Are we all wrapped up with Darkest Dungeon? Are we ready to abandon our conversation about that?
Abort conversation. No.
Does somebody have to die?
No, this isn't a hard conversation. We'll just get, mental problems.
Oh, I am so sorry.
I don't know. You lost me. I was blowing out a candle. So
we're about to blow out your candle.
Oh, geez.
Anyway, the other game that I've been playing this week has been Doom, which I mentioned last week.
Yeah, you were kind of lukewarm on it last week.
I was. I think I started to figure out some of the mechanics of the game, got more into it. I still think it's a good game, not a great game, but it's still pretty fun. The graphics are still great. It does have a good sense of humor about itself. It's not a game that takes itself seriously. So that's fun. Like, it's just there to have a good time. You just shoot guns at demons until they stop coming. So that's kind of fun. The upgrade system and like the metagame is like just okay. It gets a little bit old after a while. There's like it's like the main upgrade components is you can upgrade your suit, you can upgrade your weapons, and there's like one other thing you can upgrade, but I forget what. I think it's like the power for your health and your shield and something else I can't remember. Oh, your ammo. So like the upgrade mechanics are just okay, but there's a few flaws in them. Like I think the suit upgrades, like there's like maybe five different things you can upgrade at any given time. And so you're going to pick the ones that you want to do the most. And so then as it goes on, you're upgrading things that you care less and less about. So that's kind of like a game design flaw, perhaps. The gun mechanics are okay. I think they avoided the problem with the gun mechanics. It's like higher cost for each tier, but it's like a tiered system of unlocks, so it gets more and more powerful as you go. And then they have an interesting achievement for their gun upgrades, where when you upgrade a gun almost fully, or like with all your like upgrade tokens or whatever, it'll give you some sort of challenge that you have to complete in the game. Like it'll be like, get 50 headshots with the scope that you just received. And then once you do that, then it'll unlock a final perk for the game or for the gun. It'll be completely upgraded. It'll be like, well, let's do double damage or something like that. So I thought that was a pretty cool mechanic for like upgrading the gun feature. It's not, you know, it's not anything too revolutionary, but it's just like an added kind of fun perk that kind of goes in the back of your mind while you're playing the game, where it's like, okay, not only do I need to destroy this wave of demons, but if I do this, this, and this, I can upgrade these things as I'm doing it. So like, yeah, there's kind of an interesting metagame there.
Like again, giving yourself micro missions, like things to keep in your mind to vary up your tactics.
So I mean, you know, it's a fun game. It's again, I would not say that it's like a revolutionary game. It's not a great game, but it's not a bad game. Like, yeah, definitely if you pay like $20 to $40 for this game, I think it's well worth it. Yeah.
No. Man, I ordered that game on the 28th of December when it was on sale at Amazon.
Uh-huh.
Still has not shipped.
Do you not have Amazon Prime?
I've got Amazon Prime. I think that it's just out of stock and has been. I think that they bit off more than they could chew.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it says right now, like if I was going to try to order Doom for PS4, which is all I really feel comfortable playing it on, for system spec reasons, says it will be in stock on January the 21st. Now on my order status page, they might do well to tell me that. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I'm not a store scientist or anything, but
yeah. I don't know. It's a fun game to blow off.
Trust me, I'm a store scientist.
Oh well. I mean, it sounds like you've not come around on it, but you've found something that has a little bit of a little bit of meat for you.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a game that really overstays its welcome or anything too. I think it's, yeah, I'm not done with it, but you know, I think it's probably like a 8 to 12 hour game.
Yeah.
I think. So yeah, I think it's good.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so you heard about Darkest Dungeon. For my other game I want to talk about, I'm going to do a bit of a rewind, because I want to talk about Bloodborne again.
Oh, wow, you finished that a while ago. You beat all of Dark Souls 3 in the meantime, right?
I beat most of Dark Souls
3. Oh, right, sorry. So Bloodborne, you went back.
But yeah, damn, son, I went back to the Bonfireside Chat episodes and had some freaking realizations, man, that I need to talk.
there was content you didn't do?
Well, first off, there's a shit ton of content I didn't do. I missed all of Castle Kanehurst. Basically, if it's optional, I missed it.
Yeah, oh, so no Nightmare Frontier, no Castle Kanehurst.
Exactly. Right. And no First Floor School of Mensis either.
Oh, shit.
Which made it that much crazier when I went to the second floor. I was like, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
So I actually, though, upon reflection, you know, and realizing I missed a ton of content and a ton of exposition, I don't mind that. I actually really like the experience I had with the game, you know, missed content and misinterpretations and all.
Right.
Because the other thing that was just blowing my mind, and I was posting in the Bonfireside Chat Slack channel about this earlier today, is I, for some reason, thought that you could get back to the original version of the Hypogean jail.
No,
After unlocking like the crazy occultist version of it.
Yeah, I mean, like you get to the crazy occultist version after the moon changes phase, and that is like a constant thing in a playthrough.
Yeah, so in a feeble attempt for anyone who hasn't played the game, which, let's be honest, probably 90% of the people listening have.
I mean, aside from the other two hosts on the show, so.
Yeah, well, I'll get there. They're not listening.
nice.
So they basically, you know, the game, yeah, kind of is demarcated by these moon phases. And when things advance, you know, the world gets progressively more crazy. For some reason, I read it as, okay, there's like the normal world version and then the next moon phase version, which is really just forward in time, was a pocket dimension. And that's something that exists in this game. Like, that's not out of context.
The nightmares and stuff, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so I... like was, you know, freaking out and realizing, or thought I realized, that the little glowy messages on the ground that aren't like connected to anything else were consistent between these quote unquote dimensions. Mm-hmm. And I for some reason I had in my head that you could get to both versions, and I absolutely love the idea. And this is like, this is going to have to show up as like a short story or something, since this isn't how it actually is. But the idea that you could get to different dimensions or different dimensional versions of a place simply by going there different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, if I warp into this place at the at the lantern or the bonfire, it's one way. But if I actually walk down the path to get there, it's another way. And that was just like hyper, hyper intriguing to me. Mm-hmm. But then also realizing how much content I missed in the second half of that game.
Kanehurst is the best.
Kanehurst, from what I listened, it is. Although the Nightmare of Mensis and the first floor of the school, I missed those, I realized, because at that point in the game, like from the Unseen Village on, I was just like running and blubbering like a fool through that game.
Yeah. It's
like it became just one sprint. Like I because enemies started respawning when I killed them. And so I was like, fuck that. I'm not, you know, killing anyone anymore. I'm just going to run past you. And then the way that I encountered it, since I hadn't done the Nightmare of Mensis, which has to do with like teleporting to a new place and all that.
Or the Nightmare Frontier. Nightmare of Mensis is stories, story mandatory. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, sorry, the Nightmare Frontier. You're right. Since I hadn't seen the Nightmare Frontier, I had no context for like being teleported to a new place and certainly not going through a door. Mm-hmm. So since I had no context for the school, I was running through that like, oh my God, this is crazy. I just got warped to this random place. and then I open a door in that, and it's like literally the void that I step into. And I'm like, you know, why the hell not? Sure. Like it was just this great gameplay articulation of losing my mind. And so, you know, I'm intrigued. I love the game, so I could totally see myself going back to see all the content that I missed. Yeah. But I'm kind of not mad that I missed it on my first time around, because the experience that I got felt so complete in its own way.
So did you have to start a new game to go after this stuff?
I do. Yeah. So I started a new game plus, but I have not done anything in it. Mm-hmm. But that would be the base off of which I go and check out Castle Kinghurst stuff.
Yeah, go for it. I forget. So the PS4 that you got, did David get the old Hunters DLC, or was that after?
No, I don't have that either. So that is other content I could go and get.
Yeah. Old Hunters is amazing. It is better than even the best stuff in Bloodborne is. And Bloodborne
is really
good. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so all that, I know we've got an entire podcast dedicated to these games.
No, I'm curious. But, I'm curious for your perspective on that, because we get, you know, we're kind of in a bubble over there.
Sure. I love, the game is so conducive to kind of stories that you tell yourself about what's going on. Cause I totally had this read on like, okay, I get it. I'm kind of slipping between these dimensions, and you know, maybe these messages are consistent between the dimensions. So that sent me on like a theorizing treasure hunt every time I saw a message now. And like, so I just had this very, you know, exotic, intriguing world built up in my mind. And even though that did not wind up you know, holding together with what kind of people who have studied the game more closely have concluded, that it was satisfying to kind of build that story for myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm also glad that kind of what's replacing it is equally as satisfying. So,
yeah. That whole idea of the same place, but arrived at in a different way, possibly at a different time, surfaces in Dark Souls 3 as well, if you continue that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the only note I have for Dark Souls 3, which I'm continuing to play, and I'm starting to get a lot of deja vu, both from the first game and from areas earlier in the game. Like, everything is wrapping around in on itself right now.
Yep.
In a very interesting way. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. I am, you know, still enjoying Dark Souls 3, and now have a whole bunch of extra fuel to, once I finish it, go back and check out some stuff in Bloodborne again.
Yeah, do it. Bloodborne's great. Yeah, so I'm not going to keep us here for too much longer, just because I've been, we are in the process of rolling up a new show, and a couple of other shows are starting up new seasons. So there's been a bunch of homework to do. Mm-hmm. So one thing that's related to some of that homework, Hyper Light Drifter, is a game that I initially was very, very like gung ho about. We're covering it for the Bonfire Side Chat off season. I just want to tell people who are listening to this. Recently, they added an easy mode. Specifically, it's called Newcomer Mode. And boy, oh boy, is that the way to play that game, because otherwise it is too difficult to play. this is going to sound like a parody, but over on GameInformer.com, a user named 100% Deplorable with an anime avatar, so fuck you, says, "The game ain't that hard. Come on." No, fuck you. And on the Steam forums, somebody says,
to find these people?
I did a search for the for the Hyper Light Drifter easy mode. Mini White Dragon, white, I assume, for white nationalist, on the Steam forum says, "Shut up with easy modes and get good, scrubs. Follow Dark Souls logic." No, fuck you. In fact, go fuck yourself. Sit on a goddamn fire hydrant, you waste of human space.
Get good, brah. Get good.
Jesus Christ. It makes me so angry that I have attached myself to this thing that
You know, as a low effort new podcast that you could add to the network, we can just go find the dregs of the internet, read a quote from them that's from Twitter or a comment form, and then just all chorus like, "Fuck you, no. Fuck you, you asshole." For a minute or so.
No, yes, this game is pretty hard and difficulty is subjective. But also, let's stop and consider. Also, fuck you. so there's that. Like, Hyper Light Drifter is a beautiful game. There are some things to recommend it. We're going to talk about it a lot here in a couple weeks on that other show, but if you're going to be diving into it, play it on easy. Like, it just gives you a little bit more health and increases health drops.
The same advice for FTL.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, just play it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like the easy mode on FTL is good and fine. The other thing, so I just want to weigh in on this real quick, because I don't feel like I gave Super Mario Run enough of a shot. So when we
don't you get like a paywall 5 minutes in?
No, I bought it straight away. Like, I figured, a Nintendo game on iOS was going to be worth $10, so that was fine. When I initially talked about it on the show, I just said things that were not true. So even though there are only like 24 different levels, and if you are just trying to get through those levels without dying and just kind of navigating the obstacles, that is, it will be a very quick experience. I went back to it thinking, hey, there has to be more here. And then I got hipped to the new coins, which are, so each level has like, hey, you beat this level and you move on to the next one. But also there are pink, purple and black coins, and after you gather up all the pink coins, then all of a sudden, hey, here are these new purple coins to get, and then here are the black coins, and each of those are placed on different lines in these levels, and searching for these things, finding them and then executing the moves in the auto scroll to like get them means that like this game gets infinitely more complex and interesting as you decide to start going after them.
What do you get for getting all the coins?
I don't know. The satisfaction. Yeah, I mean, just like it's just a bunch of new stuff for you to do. Like, it does change the way that the levels feel as you start like paying more close attention and start using kind of like the weird little like nuanced moves that Mario has to kind of like execute these little things that they like designed around these weird edge cases for. So like, if you're just engaging with it on the surface and blowing through it, you're going to blow through it quickly. But like, I've been just like banging my head against some of these challenge coins, and it is harder than a lot of Mario content that I've played in a while. So, I think that my like lukewarm estimation of this thing has shifted over to like, oh, this is cool and interesting in a way that I didn't initially give it credit for.
Like, in the words of ZZ Top, it's got legs.
Yep.
I think you mean it's got legs.
Yep. That is exactly what I meant. Thank you. Both of you said it better than I ever could. That's it. Any questions about either of those?
No, good stuff. I'm glad you enjoyed it more than you thought you would.
Yeah. It's so easy when you're like trying to kill time waiting for the elevator. You know, it's like, hey, I want to dip back into that and give it more of a shot, and then to uncover a whole different thing that if I was paying more attention on the initial go through, like trying to find as much new stuff as possible, you would think that I would have encountered that other thing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Ben, you were going to say something?
Nope.
Okie doke. So do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Been saying okie doke a lot lately. Don't know why, but thank you so much for listening to level number 181. So grateful to you for sticking around and listening to this and telling friends and all the stuff that you do, responding to the multiplayer or putting in your free play multiplayer questions. It's also great. So I mentioned during the grind that I've been very busy preparing for a new show, and just a bunch of other stuff has been kind of in development and things like that. And I was talking with somebody at work and just kind of reflecting here recently as I think about the plan for the year. How crazy is it that we just decided to talk about this stuff and people were like cool with listening to it and supporting us, and B, like, we can just decide, hey, this is something that we're passionate about doing, and people are going to be there to, you know, to respond to us and listen and give us their time and help, you know, and help us out as we, you know, pursue these new things. Like, hey, Stephen King books and the collected works of REM, like, that's kind of crazy to start talking about, but we can do it because people want to hear it and people want to hear us do it. Like, collectively across the network, this is nuts. And I don't want to let it go unsaid how grateful I am, and, you know, I'll speak for other people, how grateful we are that it's that it's kind of a possibility.
Yeah, it's especially cool that 100%. The people listening to it are good people as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what we did. Yeah, don't know what we did to deserve
that. You worked hard for a number of years creating a quality series of podcasts. You really want me to go into all this?
I'll remain incredulous. Even hearing reasonable answers makes it sound like I'm like exulting in it, but no, I just want to like say to take a moment to say that, especially as we get ready to launch the new show. I don't know, it is a good thing, and wow, never thought that we'd be in a position to do that. But if you want to help this show grow, and other shows on the network, iTunes is a great place to go and leave some words or ratings or stars. Give us your stars if you have them. And
your pink ones and your purple ones.
Yeah. And the black ones, maybe.
Fidelity stars.
Yeah, so send us all your copies of David Bowie's Black Star. It's a good album. But other than that, just stick around, come around next time. We're going to be here, and we'd love to have you. Is there anything that I'm missing?
I don't think so.
This podcast is starting to sound like a Prairie Home Companion now.
Maybe. I don't know. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm always gelatin in places, including the marathon.
Then Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. Okie dokie, who has titles they want to throw in?
I only have five.
Oh, only five. Wow.
Only five.
Okay.
Grand Theft Mario.
Okay.
Pander to my prejudices. Sometimes you just want to feel like a dick. I know that's not going to be one, but still, it's fine.
Okay.
I just had to say it. Trust me, I'm a store scientist. And it's a got legs.
Nice.
Stylized with an exclamation mark, obviously.
Of course.
Okay. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I have pizza is about context.
Okay.
Why not Lyle? And then I also had two repeats from Jala. Trust me, I'm a store scientist, and it's a got legs.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
All right, I have some crossover. I had just pizza context as a condensed version.
Okay.
I also had why not Lyle.
Okay.
Because why not? Yeah, well. And I also had every sneezing is an emergency.
Every sneeze is an emergency?
Mm-hmm. That might have been off air. And then the last one I got is, at best, it's Brink.
Ooh, that is such a chilly burn. wow, I don't actually have any crossover with you guys. So I have I have pony water. a language you could hate. Mm-hmm. Which is related to pander to my prejudices and mm-hmm. magical memory machine.
Huh.
Hmm. So we have four that had double submissions or double votes here. Trust me, I'm a store scientist. It's a got legs. pizza is about context, and why not Lyle?
So if we choose why not Lyle, I feel like we can basically force Eric to name his dog Lyle.
Well, it's just the best part about it is that of those, when you said that one, I just started like giggling to myself. So
why not Lyle?
I don't know. Maybe it was the beer, but it makes me very happy.
I mean, the rationale is in the name.
Yeah, why not Lyle?
Yeah.
So why not Lyle is good, but I want Eric to know that even though we were making this the title, why not Lyle, we decided that he should call his little bear either Chaz or Chester, or if you want to get saucy with it, Champ. I think Champ would also be a good nickname for that majestic animal.
Chester, any good dog has three names. We all know that.
Yeah. So there's the regular name, which is Chester. There's Chaz, which is the colloquial, and when he's been an especially good dog, which let's admit it, always he's Champ. Okay, I just want to make sure that he knows that, because why not Lyle is a good. Yep, let's go for it.
I want him to name it "Why Not Lyle" as a sentence. I want that to be the name of the dog now.
Okay.
Oh, I wouldn't do that to that pupper.
Yeah, no, I think that he
deserves Chester.
A dog has dignity as opposed to this farce that we participate in. this shared dalliance. So yes, why not Lyle? It is.
All right.
Yeah.